Thousands of us make New Year's resolutions. When that clock marks the start of a new year, it's a new opportunity to reflect on self-improvement. I'm Bill Anderson. Welcome to Central Standard. But, and I'll use myself as an example, sometimes that self-improvement is more about self, period. It's me being seduced by vanity. Psychologist and KU Med Center professor Dr. Bruce Leese returns with observations about vanity and how we can tweak or redirect our New Year's resolutions so that they are in interest of family, friends, community, the things that are truly important, and perhaps a bit less about physical appearance or personal accomplishment. I hope you're interested because we're inviting your phone calls and social media participation. It's Central Standard, but first the news. Good morning. Many of us made New Year's resolutions, maybe to lose weight as an example. It's a sensible thing to do because of the obvious health benefits. But is there a point at which we cross over from making a healthy choice to making a more vain, self-important choice? Well, we're going to talk about vanity today. This is Central Standard. I'm Bill Anderson, and Dr. Bruce Leese is back. And good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Dr. Leese is a psychologist, and he's a professor at KU Med Center. First off, the weather, in a word.
Cold.
Are you okay with this kind of weather?
I have two pairs of gloves on today because I had frostbite as a kid. My fingers get numb instantly.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
No, I'm not okay with it. I want it to be a little warmer.
Well, yeah, I have to tell you, yesterday we were out and about, and we were on unplowed country roads, and we went to visit our horse friend by the name of Jethro, and I was without gloves for several minutes at a time as I was taking some photographs of my daughter with the horse. And by the time I got home, I had that tingling feeling that one gets when frostbite is trying to get a hold of you. It was a little bit on the frightening side, but I woke up today feeling just fine.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up the temperature and the cold, because one of the things I like about the cold is that I don't have to dress up as much to go to work. I can wear the flannel shirt and the down vest you see me in now. And if I am vain at all, it's certainly not about my appearance, as some people will reassure you.
Well, that's a great segue into today's topic. Why don't we get right into it, Bruce, and talk a little bit about, you know, your definition of vanity?
It's interesting because there are people who believe that vanity is excessive pride and focus on just appearance, mm-hmm. But the concept of vain is a pretty exciting concept because it really covers a lot of ground. Vanity can be unhealthy when it is excessive pride, and when enough of it starts to look like narcissism. But everybody should pay some attention to the way they come across to other people. It's part of being part of the human community. So I won't start off with the idea that vanity is a bad thing. I'll start off with the idea that vanity is inevitable.
Okay, so basically, though, when we talk about vanity, we're talking about one's physical appearance and
A lot of other things.
As well as someone wanting to express a level of authority or appear more important than he or she is?
Oh, yeah. Popularity, success, power, control, authority, okay. Possession of things. There have been some studies that show that men and women focus on themselves differently as a result of socialization in our culture, so that women have been socialized to pay more attention to their physical attractiveness. At least that's the way it's been in the past. Men are much more occupied with whether or not they, you know, they can be proud of their careers or their income. But that's, you know, that's a socialization process.
But I have to wonder, Dr. Leese, if that's not changing, because one only needs to turn on the television and watch for maybe an hour, 2 hours maximum, and you'll see cosmetics and surgeries targeted at men and women.
Oh, it is changed. I think that when my daughter was in middle school and high school, 8 years ago or so, I was shocked at the number when I got to meet the boys in her classes. I was shocked at how much things had changed, that the boys all had to have six packs by their own standards, you know, muscular abdomens. And it was really, it really was part of the shift. And also, it's very exciting to watch women become so much more of the fabric of leadership in our society, as it should be. But that seems like it would lead inevitably to a focus on the same kinds of things that men were focused on in their vanity. Hopefully, men and women will be less vain about it and more excited about the activities of professionalism and those things that we think about when some people think of whether or not they're good enough and therefore they are vain.
Let's say I made a New Year's resolution to lose some weight, which I didn't, but let's just suppose that for a moment. And maybe it's strictly for vanity reasons. You know, the benefits are going to be my health will be improved. So, you know, what's wrong with that?
I don't pathologize. I don't think it's pathological or bad or dysfunctional to be somewhat vain, if vain means concerned about the impression one leaves on the world. It really depends on so many circumstances. You were asking me about the definition of vanity. It's interesting that the word vain can also be defined as ineffectual and unsuccessful and futile, like a vain effort or a vain war. You can even find definitions like empty and valueless and senseless or foolish as definitions of vain. So there's so many different ways to look at it, and to the extent that it's problematic and it's psychological, we're talking about it today here.
Okay, so is it rooted in a low self-esteem or perhaps an excessive self-esteem?
I think it's rooted in socialization.
Beg your pardon?
I think it is rooted. Vanity is rooted in the way we're socialized in this country.
Okay.
We are a country that is constantly being reminded of what attractive looks like, what beautiful looks like, what sexy looks like. I'm not a world traveler, but I certainly can't imagine that every country in the world focuses. I know right now Iraq and Syria, Iraqis and Syrians are not thinking about whether they have tight abs or whether they, you know, whether they as a people. So I think it's a luxury that we can think about things like our appearance or, you know, how well we're doing in our careers that a lot of countries just don't have. And I wish it didn't go to our heads the way it does.
Well, do you think it's the result of, you know, the high standard of living that America generally enjoys? Are we conditioned by mass media? What do you think is the culprit?
Very, very conditioned by mass media. The old expression that sex sells is valid here. Sexy sells, beautiful sells. When people see people on commercials looking good, having fun, being popular, they strive for it. Unfortunately, we don't have commercials that cause people to strive to be generous and philanthropic. And when we do see those commercials, we see them on late night TV. We see, you know, Save the Children and the Humane Societies. So I wish there was more focus in our society on becoming a more giving, kind, philanthropic, empathetic human being. But most of what we see, and therefore the acculturation process, leans more towards beautiful, sexy, and successful.
I don't want to make this all about New Year's resolutions, but I do want to talk a little bit more about that, because you're suggesting that some of our New Year's resolutions fall completely short of being about family and loved ones and friends and community, and that we're just kind of consumed by our own bodies and our own images.
Well, it's interesting because you know, I just spoke to somebody today who was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. I mean, I work in healthcare, so
sorry to hear that.
Spoke to somebody today who's diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, And I think what we ought to be occupied with is, again, as I've said often on the show, the meaning of life. Why am I here? And what difference will my existence make while I'm here? And for some people, it isn't friends and family. For some mm-hmm. people, it's giving back to the, you know, to the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a reasonable New Year's. I think New Year's resolutions are fine. I mean, I don't think they're good or bad, or they're a neutral thing in my book. But I think it's okay to look at your body, to look at your career, to look at your whatever, and to say, you know what? I'm going to make 2014 a different kind of year. I don't want to get diabetes from obesity. I don't want my family to lose me to a heart attack because I smoke cigarettes. So New Year's resolutions are fine. A lot of them have to do with I want to look better and I want to be wealthier and more powerful.
Yeah. Happy New Year, folks. It's Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Bill Anderson with psychologist and professor at KU Med Center, Dr. Bruce Lease. We're talking about vanity. Did you make a New Year's resolution? Is it for vain reasons, or is it about living a good life and making life better for those around you? 816-235-2888, 235-2888. Send an email to centralstandard@kcur.org. In prepping for this show, I came across a lot of religious commentary and articles and columns and so forth, including one that argued if what we do is not driven by a desire to fulfill Allah or God's plan, it's all vanity. Would you agree with that?
Well, is
that a bit extreme, perhaps?
No, you know, it's interesting. The quote is, it's, you bring up something really important here, and that's that religion is the way most people find a way of organizing their spirituality. I mm-hmm. mean, if you're going to organize it, if it's more than just a feeling of spirituality, most people who do organize their spirituality do so by getting involved in their religion. They look for a church, a mosque, a synagogue, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I often work with patients who lack an organized spirituality, and I don't require or even urge or insist people to find a religion, but to figure out, again, why they're on earth. What's going to make their lives matter? The old cliche, you know, what will people say when you're gone, I think is really pertinent here. So if your personal God or your reason for being which can't be seen,
mm-hmm.
Gives you direction, and it's a direction that benefits you and society, then perfect. Then you should do your day's work in the service of God or your own personal reason for being on earth. So did I answer your question?
I think so. I'm not certain.
Well, yeah, it's hard when you specifically say God and Allah because not everybody can relate to that.
Yeah.
To
well, that. I was just referencing some of the literature, some of the information I gathered while I was researching the show.
Yeah. Good. I think that's
so. Great. So at its worst, vanity is probably synonymous with narcissism.
Vanity is kind of like the requirement for becoming narcissistic, worrying about where you stand in relation to the rest of the world, or not even worrying about it. Vanity is the concern about what people think. But when you are so confident that you are awesome and perfect and better than other people, when you're so convinced that you no longer have to be vain, then you've reached narcissism. You are a narcissist, or you've become a narcissist. The difference between the two is, to some extent, that vanity, people who are vain are looking, so they haven't really bought into the fact that they're perfect yet
mm-hmm.
in their own minds, like narcissists believe.
Would you describe vanity as a compulsion, an obsession, just a compensation? You know, we talked about the low self-esteem earlier.
Well, vanity is an effort to have another reason to have esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it's a very impermanent or temporary state. A person who is vain, wondering if they look good enough, if they're smart enough, if they're successful enough, is really muddled in you know, and thinking about things that aren't going to last. They're not going to matter in the real world. And so, you know, self-esteem is truly believing in the value of humanity, of which the thinker, the person, is one, a part of humanity. So I'm better off thinking we're all of great value and we're all equal. And this way I don't have to worry about whether I am better or look better or am sexy enough or attractive enough.
Well, you're a psychologist, so I imagine you see this a lot or have over the years. What are the personal costs when I engage in these behaviors?
You know, there are people who don't realize that their vanity is not invisible, or to instead of two negatives, there are people who don't realize that their vanity is really obvious. Mm-hmm. They're almost laughable. It's interesting because attractiveness, when they do research on even physical attractiveness, attractive to most Americans, at least, is kind of average. It's you know, if your eyes are too far apart or if they're too close together, mm-hmm. if they're too big or too small, if your nose is too teeny or too big. So average is really what people – is what's attractive. So people who strive to be really different and to look different and to be really special, who build up their muscles and, you know, they shine them up with oil and all that stuff and put their pictures on Facebook – those people don't look good to the world, and they're miserable. They're seeking, to go back to your question about God, they're seeking a false God.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, by thinking that their well-defined muscles or their perfect skin or their perfectly colored hair is going to bring them meaning or satisfaction in life. That is the problem with it. You asked, what is... you know, what are the costs of vanity? To when it's extreme, the costs of vanity are that we lose ourselves. Interestingly, there was a show on TV last night, and I don't even know what it was, but I think it was a 60 Minutes type of show. And they talked about a program for getting kids plastic surgery they're bullied. Children, there's some kind of program for if children are bullied because they're because of some kind of feature that they think is unattractive, they can get plastic surgery. So if you're being teased, the one kid on the show had a big nose, and his parents were thinking, yeah, he needs plastic surgery because they're bullying him over his big nose.
Yeah. Oh, that's sad. I hate to hear that.
You asked about the costs. We are so preoccupied with whether we're good enough.
Yeah.
That we forget that we don't have pancreatic cancer, and that it's amazing we can even get in the car and start it in the morning because we have the miracle of being alive and human.
I'm trying to make this whole vanity thing have the potential for a positive outcome. Is that possible? Is it possible that it can lead me to meaning or some level of satisfaction?
Yes, it makes me sad when very, very capable, competent people so rebel against the standards of society that they don't do the basic things that involve vanity that will get them employed, for example, and keep them employed. You know, we have a dress code where I work that's at KU that's, I think, reasonable, you know. But if I want to rebel and say, I don't care how I look and it's not your business and I lose my job over that, you know, that's kind of a tragedy to so lack an awareness of the impression that I leave on other people that I lose things that are valuable to me. It's really unfortunate. I've seen where depression leads some people to not care about things like, you know, bathing and how they smell. They're not going to die because they smell bad, but there's an absence, a complete absence of vanity because of suffering. And, you know, nobody really wants to be around somebody who smells bad.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you know, social norms to some extent dictate the need to dress well. Using the example of an attorney is always expected to show up with suit and tie on.
Yep.
You know?
That's right.
Just some thoughts on that.
It's interesting when you go for a job interview. You know the rule on how you're supposed to dress for a job interview?
No.
It's one level up from their standard dress code. So we don't require or expect any of our residents mm-hmm. at the medical center mm-hmm. to walk around, you know, with a suit coat on. And I don't even think we require a tie for doctors. I'm sure we don't. But they all come dressed, you know, with this, men come dressed in a suit, women come dressed in suits, mm-hmm. business suits. And so they're dressed one step up from what would be expected on the job. And, you know, an awareness of that level of expectation could mean the difference between people getting what they want in life and not getting what they want.
The phone number is 235-2888, 816-235-2888. I'm Bill Anderson with Dr. Bruce Lease. This is Central Standard, and we're talking about vanity. Do you have a question? Did you make a New Year's resolution that you maybe kind of wonder about? Well, we'd like to hear from you. Again, 235-2888.
I have something that just popped into my head.
Go for it.
I'm always impressed, not in a good way. I'm always a little bit shocked when people who are very humble are married to people who are vain, and the vain person turns people off. You know, it's they're always, what's it called? Preening, or there's some word, that, you know, when you're always checking your hair and your clothing and looking in the mirror. And but I'm always surprised when somebody who is a life partner with somebody who's overly vain doesn't say, you know, why are you doing this?
Right.
I know that.
I would think it would be at great risk to challenge that.
I would think so, too, but yeah. A worthy risk. I mean, how many times have you ever met a couple where you liked one person and you didn't like the other one so much, so you didn't spend as much time with them? And
yeah, perhaps all the time.
And, you know, it oftentimes what turns people off is somebody who's overly vain. Mm-hmm. And it's just, so often their partners are normal. They're not overly vain.
Yeah.
And don't you wish they just say, honey, the man or the woman, you know, you don't have to. We're just going out to dinner with friends. You don't have to keep talking about how great your career is, how you've been promoted, how smart you are, how you met the governor, the president, et cetera. I mean, but so in relationships,
yeah.
I wonder why people don't talk to their vain partners and say you're too vain.
But say a person was raised that way, and that's just kind of how he or she was conditioned. And
I
that's
see it what, all the time.
Yeah, okay.
It is very, very, very difficult. I see men and women who are oftentimes I'll see men who are way too formal. Everything is sir. Everything is – it's so formal mm-hmm. That it's depersonalizes things. And I've seen women –
becomes insincere, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I see women who they may do the same thing also, or they may be overly focused on whether they look okay. It's – you know, men do the same thing, as you were saying earlier. But why don't people realize that that is not necessary anymore? That's not important to people. That's not what's important.
You know, I hate the necktie, by the way, but I want to share a little research with you while prepping for this show. It has origins with Chinese soldiers some 1,000 years ago. They actually wore ties, not like what we wear today. And the Roman emperor actually sported one back in the early years of A.D.
Interesting.
And yeah, I know. Because that's one thing that has always like confused me. That's one incredibly uncomfortable piece of clothing to wear. And why we still hold on to that, just it's mind-boggling.
Well, it's interesting because I have traveled to hotter climates, like the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in the Knesset, the Israeli parliament. I don't believe that any of them wear ties.
Really?
I've been to a number of countries where they've just ditched the tie in settings that you would consider highly formal.
You know, other than it being personally annoying to us to encounter someone who is expressing himself or herself in a vain manner, you know what? We can avoid those people. It's almost like a so what? I will walk on the other side of the sidewalk, so to speak.
Well, and you know, it's one of the questions you haven't asked that I hope people are asking themselves, not necessarily at this moment, but in general, is how much is too much? Is a is a nose job to have a cute pug nose.
Yeah.
Really necessary? is it really, really, really important to get Botox injections so that you don't have lines under your eyes or whatever they're for?
Is it,
where do you draw the line? A big one is for women that they have to decide, am I going to color my hair? I am not making any claims to know when it's good and when it's not good, but I would throw it out there. When is it okay? And when is it not okay to worry about who we become as we age?
Yeah.
Or who we look, what we look like from the time we're born.
Yeah. How do you deal with that? You know, I'm just interested because, you know, you deal with people with all sorts of problems and conditions, but you have a personal life, a social life as well. How do you deal when you're having, let's say you're out to dinner with a couple and one of the members is incredibly vain? How does that interaction go for you? What kind of an evening can we expect out of Bruce Lees?
You know, I get quiet I don't know anyone who I hang around who's, you know, physically too vain, who's worried about hair and makeup and all that stuff. I mean, I just don't hang around with people where that's really obvious. But, you know, if somebody's talking about how great they are, I just know you know what, Bill? I know I better keep my mouth shut.
Yeah. Okay, so you just...
I turn off the psychologist part.
I see.
And I've known people who've not done well because of their vanity, who I've been, acquaintances with, and I just really have to work.
I bet you do.
Flipping that switch.
Yeah. Is there any evidence that there's an evolutional link to vanity and that those types of related behaviors?
I think the evolution of it really is that as we move, there's the old Maslow's needs hierarchy that most people know about. At the most basic level, we need to be safe. We need to be protected from the elements. We need to have food to eat. And that's at the very basic level. Those are a few of the bottom rungs of the ladder or levels of the pyramid. But as a society becomes more wealthy, they start to think about the things that aren't that basic anymore. So that's part of the evolution of humankind.
We're going to take a short break. Upon our return, we'll take your phone calls, we'll look at social media comments, and we'll talk more about vanity. I'm Bill Anderson. This is Central Standard on KCUR and KCUR.org. Classic song from 1972, Carly Simon's You're So Vain. Vanity is the topic on Central Standard this morning. I'm Bill Anderson with psychologist Dr. Bruce Lees. He's a psychologist and a professor at KU Medical Center. Okay, quick digression. You know the artist, right?
Uh-huh.
Who?
Carly Simon.
Who is she? For years, she played with who she, you know, she would tease us. She would never tell us who she was singing about. Do you know? Any guesses?
I know.
It's not Steve Kraske.
Was she married to James Taylor? But that was
she
that,
was.
She was married to James Taylor.
Yeah, she insisted it wasn't James.
It was a big rock star, wasn't it?
Not Mick Jagger.
But it was a big rock star.
Not Warren Beatty, although Warren Beatty wrote her a note of thanks.
Oh, God.
Isn't that classic? You know, the best guess is David Geffen, the record producer, but I don't even think she's confirmed that. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I just did the math here. You said 1972, and I subtracted my birth year from that and thought and discovered here that I was 16 years old when she came out with that song. And the reason why I did that is, you know, one of the benefits of growing old and creaky, like with the joints hurt,
it's
all that stuff, is that that stuff has made me, and I hope others, forget about, you know, what we were thinking about when we were 16. Am I good enough? Am I good looking enough? Is, you know, if I'm noticed, is it for, you know, for good reasons? So that would be around 40 plus years ago, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. But Bruce, don't you think that those are the years at which we're under the most pressure to kind of conform and to adopt those behaviors related to vanity?
Yes. And hopefully we outgrow that worry about whether we are good enough, and we accept, you know, they talk, you brought up religion, so I'll go with a little religion here. One of the core concepts of Buddhism, for example, is that people are miserable because they get attached to things.
Mm-hmm.
So attachment to things that are impermanent, that won't last. And all those things, success and attractiveness and muscle tone, they all go away. Mm-hmm. Take it from a 57-year-old guy. They all go away. And they, you know, if you live life well, that's good that that's not important anymore.
You have, let's pretend for a moment you have a 16-year-old daughter, and you know she's feeling that pressure at school. Nothing you say as her father is probably going to make a difference. But how is there a technique or a way that a parent can reach that child and get that message across, the message you just shared about that it really doesn't matter, none of this is important?
You ask a really good question. I do have a 26-year-old,
mm-hmm.
and gave her all those messages, as did her mom when she was a teen. Forget about middle school. That was there was no real convincing then. But high school is a time of increased maturity. And what I found was that I would tell her that, and she would go, yeah, Dad, what do you know? And then I'd overhear her talking to her friends who felt insecure, who would be saying the exact same thing.
Really?
You know, it's what's on the inside that matters. And now that she's 26, I know that she knows that and believes that. So that message is a really, really important message. And it's interesting because I worry about getting kids over involved in dance and soccer, and it goes on and on and on, because ultimately competition, competitive sports, I say I worry about it. I'm not saying it's wrong.
Yeah.
But competitive endeavors are all about trying to be your best.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even encourage parents to say to their kids, just do your best, because – how does a kid know when?
I failed.
Well, the problem is no one on the planet knows what anyone's best is, so it's an empty recommendation. I mean, you got to give me that, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, but then what do you say? I mean, you want them to be achievers, and to really deep down, I want my children to do their very best. I want 100%.
How many minutes do we have left of the show to talk you out of that? I think our last conflict was whether long distance relationships are healthy.
Yeah, that's right.
Getting to this false idea that you have that people can do their best or strive for that. Since we don't know what it is, it could just be a source of anxiety.
Mm.
How about teaching children to just feel fortunate for all they have and to figure out what they love to do and what makes them feel good? And how about just modeling for them non-competitive giving? And it always impresses me. I have the good fortune of working with some people of pretty high means here in town, in various capacities, just as a community member and so forth. And it always impresses me when a family that has a lot is teaching their children to be humble. It just blows me away because it's so difficult for so many people to focus on what they've accomplished as a family. I have worked with families where the whole thing is they keep saying, we're the best family, we're the closest family, we're the this, we're the that. There's no need to worry about whether you're the best family.
235-2888, 235-2888. 2888. That puts you in touch with us. Dr. Bruce Leese, psychologist, is here this morning, and we're talking about vanity. 235-2888 at Central Standard at KCUR.
It's funny, from pitching here, I remember how many times we're supposed to say a number. You forgot the area code.
Yeah. Well, oh, I'm sorry, 816-235-2888. I thought maybe I gave your home phone number or something. Yeah, you know, based on what you just told me, though, I could envision one of my children running through a field of clover, skipping along and throwing out little flower petals. And that's fulfillment there.
Yeah, good. Tell them they should go get the clover bill.
It doesn't pay the bills.
Again, if we're talking about wanting your kids to achieve versus wanting them to find meaning in your life, I hope we'd get a unanimous vote of 100% finding meaning.
I want to go back to an email we received earlier in which Jill asked about the evolutional link. But let me expand beyond that. Jill says, I'm thinking of the amazing, bizarre appearance of male birds of many species who dance and display for the females. It's said that it's driven by the females, who are often very plain.
You know, I've always been fascinated with anthropology. And always wished I could have had more time to study it.
Are you avoiding answering this question?
Well, I know that there are other creatures that use prancing around and being attractive to procreate. I'm sure that's partly what humans have evolved from. And still do. So I'm avoiding it. I don't know the answer.
Okay.
I'm not going to be vain about that.
Vanity is our discussion point today. I'm Bill Anderson with Dr. Bruce Leese. He's a professor at KU Medical Center. He's also a practicing psychologist. He's our resident psychologist. Again, we'll take your phone calls at 816-235-2888. Do you have any behaviors that are kind of connected to vanity? Maybe you've kind of overcome those kind of behaviors. How'd you do that? Give us a call, 235-2888. And Rick's joining us. Rick's calling from Peculiar. Hey, Rick.
Good morning.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, how are you? Hey, I just wanted to relate something that happened to me in my early career. I'm a professional musician, and I probably know the answer to that Carly Simon song.
Well, give it a shot, Rick.
But anyway, I just wanted to relate that I had the opportunity very, very, very young to work with some very successful musicians, Elton John, Eagles, and Stephen Stills, and people like that.
Nice.
And my vanity caused me a great deal of problem because I could have excelled further had I not been so concerned about who I knew and what I could do and kind of gave people the cold shoulder a lot of times and lost out of some really important opportunities.
Man, Rick, the opposite of vain is humble, and your willingness to admit that is about as humble as you get. And if you were vain at one time, what?
I kind of learned that the hard way. But I try to live my life as humble as possible now.
I think that's very awesome. How old are you?
I am 59.
Yep, we're close in age. That's a good. We still. I'm hoping, Rick, you and I still have a bunch of years left to enjoy that humility.
Well, it almost seems,
well,
Rick.
You,
like,
you know, I went to see my analyst last week. She claimed that I had 40 more years to live.
Good for her. Good for you. I hope that's true for you.
Hey, Rick, it almost seems like in the music industry, and you've played with some big names, that physical appearance, body image, and all the trappings of success are almost, you know, promoted or, you know, they're kind of a marketing vehicle for one's career.
It's true that you want to look your best. You always want to walk out and look your best. But a lot of that also comes external pressures that are placed upon you to do your best. And a lot of people in the music industry, when I was coming up, were, you know, in their early 20s or mid-20s, and you really don't have a lot of things together to really cope with some of the pressures externally. So you may go off the deep end and become obsessed with your own vanity.
Before we let you go, Rick, who do you think Carly was singing about?
I'm going to go with what you said.
David Geffen?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, nice call today. Thank you.
Boy, okay. I have a list of things Rick's call got me thinking about. I do think it's so important, instead of just saying that vanity can be a problem, is to say that the cure, if vanity is a disease, the cure is humility. So another thing that I think may be of some help to some people is the fact that performance anxiety, the ability to do well when it's time to, you know, to be out there in front of a group of people and function, mm-hmm. performance anxiety has been shown to be related to self-appraisal or self-evaluation, or if we were to give a rough term to it, it'd probably be vanity. So to the extent that I am worried about what everyone will think out there in Radioland when I'm sitting here, I'm going to be pretty nervous and unable to speak because I'll be worried about me. Do I sound okay? But if you have anxiety of any sort, there's probably some fear that you're not going to do well in the eyes of others. And that's the kind of vanity that could be crippling.
Tricia joins us. Tricia is phoning from Paola.
Hi, Tricia.
Good morning. I have kind of an interesting twist because I think we make deals with ourselves. I am 58. Don't mind telling anybody. I have not worn makeup for over 30 years. I don't color my hair. I don't dress up excessively. I carry probably 20 more pounds than I should, but I will never give up my Botox.
And I'm glad I said that. I'm glad I said I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with it. I don't even know enough to know what before and after pictures look like of somebody who uses Botox.
Oh, it's amazing. It is amazing. And it is amazing after you've worked outside for 40 years, what the sun will do to your skin. And so even it's because, I guess it's because it, I feel like it's my face and my smile that greets the world. And so I don't wear, like I said, I don't wear makeup. I don't go to extra measures other ways, but I want to make sure that my face is bright and shining all the time.
It's really, I'm glad you called.
We make deals with ourselves on what's acceptable and what's not.
Well, there's something else here that I want to shine a light on that you said. I have, at the medical center, gotten lots of referrals from people who are going to get weight loss surgery and plastic surgery, referrals where the physician says, we want you to see a psychologist before we do this for you in order to make sure that, you know, we're solving a problem here, not just. So what they're concerned about is, you know, is somebody going to really be happy with what is being done, or are they going to just want the next surgery and the next surgery? So you, Tricia, you have convinced me from saying that, you know, you're comfortable with yourself, you're comfortable with your extra weight, you're comfortable with not needing makeup, etc. You are not the kind of person who I'd say to the plastic surgeon, you know, Tricia's never going to be happy with herself. So if I had to make a diagnosis, if I had to make a decision now, it sounds like you're somebody who uses that kind of procedure well.
Well, I just think that it's interesting that we do kind of make deals with ourselves with what we'll do. How far will you go for the price of vanity, and how comfortable are you in your own skin?
You know, it's funny. I am smiling from ear to ear because one of my most favorite movies in the world ever, it's a very disturbing and brilliant movie, is The Devil's Advocate. And, you know, it's all about making a deal with the devil.
Yeah.
And it ends with the phrase, and this won't ruin the movie for anyone, it ends with the devil looking in the mirror saying, vanity, my favorite sin. So it's okay to make a deal with yourself, Tricia. It's when you make a deal with the devil that gets you into trouble.
We seem to be doing a cycle of a series here on the seven deadly sins, huh?
That's okay with me.
Hey, let's go back to the phones. And from Kansas City, Missouri, Peter's joining us on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Peter.
I just wanted to offer the comment that I had tried to lose weight for many years. And at one point, I was about 100 pounds heavier than I am now.
Congratulations.
I lost 30 or 40 pounds, but then seesawed back and forth and couldn't make any more gains because I just really wanted to look good. You know, I wanted to look better. But it wasn't until until I took up a hobby that required me to get fit, that I really lost the rest of the weight. And, you know, it was when it became, weight loss became a means to an end, not just an end in itself, that, and when vanity was taken out of the equation, then I was able to be successful.
Let me tie that, what you just said, to an earlier comment I made about performance anxiety. And then I'll even tie that to Bill here's concern about whether it's good to tell kids to do your best. I strongly believe from working with people who are anxious and unhappy that to the extent that you over-evaluate whether you're good enough or whether you're fat enough or thin enough or ugly enough or pretty enough, just to use terms people always use, if you're focused on that, it's not necessarily going to facilitate a good outcome. It won't make you, it won't necessarily help you lose the weight. So by focusing on something that you enjoyed, that you loved, you were successful at doing something you didn't even set out to do. So to relate it again to performance anxiety and telling children not necessarily they have to do their best or they should do their best, I think the idea of telling people to find what they love and do it as well as they need to do it to keep loving it is a good message. If you go to the gym or you go hunting or you go hiking or whatever you do, whatever your physical activity is, and you're so immersed in it that you flow, that it just feels so natural and so good that you don't want to eat and you're getting exercise, that's the way to do it. And that's the way kids find great careers for themselves. They find what they love and they do it well because they love it, not because they're trying to do their best.
And obviously Peter's subscribing to that.
He's subscribing to it and doing a good job.
Happy New Year, Peter.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Time is of essence, so I want to get Annie from the Northland on the air. Hi, Annie.
Hi. I am calling about the selfie. And
the selfie.
I really struggle with the selfie on Instagram and Facebook, and I can, like, appreciate it in a teenager, like, you're just kind of trying to figure it out, but I'm in my mid-30s, and when I see my friends doing selfies, I just, like, surprise them. What is that about?
Okay, I will tell you what it's about. I recommend that you and the rest of anybody who's interested Google the term need for popularity in quotes. This way you just get need for popularity. There's been some wonderful research on that concept, the need for popularity. And it's a new construct, and it's the focus of research sparked by the age of social media. And they've got a scale that you complete that determines how much you need to be popular. The more selfies you take, the more you post, the more your need is for popularity.
Uh-oh.
But, yep. But they have found very clearly that there's an inverse relationship between need for popularity and self-report of self-esteem. The more you want to be popular, the less likely it is that you really feel good about yourself. And how else can you be popular? By taking a billion selfies and posting them all on Facebook, right? Makes you popular.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. What do you make of this? Annie, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. That's a good question.
What do you make of this? New Year's Eve. I'm at a club in Lawrence, and Coach Bill Self of the KU basketball team is in the place. Everyone's doing, and I'm guilty as charged. Everyone in the place is doing what I call a Bill selfie.
A Bill selfie.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not claiming any great quality that I don't do stuff like that. But every time I think of posting something, I have like six pictures on our shop's Facebook page, or maybe it's between about six. But my thought isn't, oh, I'll be great and I won't do that. It's more that nobody really cares. Nobody's going to look at my picture and go, isn't he awesome? Isn't he wonderful? And I don't know anyone that's really just sitting at their computer waiting to see a picture of me.
Oh, I do, Bruce. Let's go back to the phones. And Barbara from South Kansas City is on the air.
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? I'd like to inquire about Dr. Bruce Lee's opinion on a particular phrase. You might have heard this, I don't know. And it goes, looking good is the best revenge. And I was wondering if you could give me your take on that.
Yeah.
It reminds me, what show was it where they had the spoof on it's better to look good than to feel good? Looking good is the best revenge. I would like to believe. Do you want my? I'll give you contrasting answers: a cynical one and a very positive one.
Okay.
It is my. Here's the very positive one. I'll let you pick, Barb. You want the cynical one or the? Okay. Cynical one is that it's just wrong. If you work hard to look good, you don't look good, etc. But I think it's a good positive statement if you believe that to the extent that you feel good about yourself and about the world and about life, it doesn't matter how much you weigh. You'll have whether you have, whatever, gray hair, short hair, no hair. To the extent that you are living life well, you will look good. And therefore, it's good revenge. If you've been hurt by people in this world and you want to come back, the best way to come back is to love life. And that'll make you look good. How's that?
Well, you've been listening to Central Standard, our conversation, Vanity, with Dr. Bruce Leese. He's a psychologist and a professor of family medicine at KU Med Center. Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you.
Your rhyme, but a legend's only a lonely boy when he goes home alone.
You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of KCUR.org. If you've taken the advice about vanity today and you still have goals to improve your health in the new year, Central Standard will be here to help again tomorrow. We'll be exploring the latest in exercise science and behavior modification. Plus, we'll look at the chief season and what's potentially ahead. Up to Date is next with a look at the upcoming legislative sessions in both Missouri and Kansas. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. I'm Bill Anderson. This is KCUR.